today what we're hoping to do is to give you our take on what happened during our pilot, how we designed our pilot, and the title of this session may be a little bit misleading, or you should pay attention to the word solution in the title, because while we did not adopt an e-portfolio solution, one single solution, we certainly learned a lot and are supporting e-portfolio practice. And I'm at USC right now, so this is about Cornell's experience. We also had a pilot at USC prior to my getting there, and I'll provide a link to what we're currently doing, which is using blogs as a platform for portfolios for students. So during this session, we didn't really create a template for how to design your pilot, but we're asking a series of questions, and I think it's a great way to actually come away from this session possibly with a framework for how you're going to design, if that is your interest in going back and designing a pilot. And one of the first questions I would ask you all, and you may be here out of sheer curiosity, but by low-tech show of hands, what's driving your interest in e-portfolios? How many people are here because they've gotten the mandate from institutional leaders, and it's a mandate to recommend a solution, right? It's about what's the technology we should choose, foregone conclusion that there is enough interest and readiness for portfolios, right? How many are here because faculty are sort of bubbling and doing things in different places around campus? Yep, so it's not actually a movement, but it's sort of a bubbling around campus. How about student interest? Any students approaching you about wanting to, oh, really? Okay. How about institutional accreditation assessment? Anybody having gone through the process, about to go through the process? Yep, that's at USC, that's familiar. And due diligence. Maybe you had portfolios in place ready to scan for another solution. That's great. So in this room, in this little community here, we have coming at this pilot with a whole lot of from a number of different perspectives. And that informs your plan right from the start, what the driver is. And I think one of the most challenging drivers is the first bullet, that mandate, because the expectation is that you're going to come out of this with a technology solution. And we kind of bucked that trend with what we did with our pilot. So another of our key questions that hopefully you're able to answer is that at the end, when you do, if and when you make a recommendation, conduct the pilot, report on the outcomes, who's sponsoring this pilot? Do you know? Do you have a single entity? Do you have a decision maker? You know, who are you making this recommendation to? That's a really key point. And a lot of times we assume that we, you know, it's this, the faculty. Well, who are those people? Is it the Senate, an advisory committee? It's very important. And complicating it further, are there multiple decision makers? So some things that I think are at the beginning of figuring out what you're going to do with the pilot and designing it.
So the goals of this session, as you see, are really to go through how we developed our pilot, and we designed it using various project plans. At Cornell, we have a fairly established project management methodology, which we also adapt to our pilot planning as well as our assessment and evaluation planning. So part of this, we had several different kinds of assessment strategies depending on the goals of each phases of this particular pilot. We also had a very clear technology assessment strategy, because it was as much about the features that are available to the ePortfolio users as well as the technology and its usability and some other things that we'll talk about. We really look very strongly at the user experience, both from the faculty perspective and from the student perspective, to really look at what is the value of ePortfolios for teaching and learning. And, of course, the last thing, which was always the most interesting part, is when we were finished, is how to communicate to the various campus constituencies about the progress of our pilot and the decision-making process that we went through. And just to note is on the Pathable for this session, we've uploaded many of our documents that are associated with the various stages of the pilot. There is the executive summary of our final report. We pulled the goals out of the three different project plans that we used for the different stages of the pilot. It has a copy of our evaluation plan and some other background information that we use to inform the pilot. So one of the things to really think about is where we came from for this, because we began with an exploration project. At Cornell, for the past 8 to 9 years, we've had a faculty innovation and teaching program where faculty submit proposals and they become projects. And one of the earliest projects was an exploration with our international teaching assistant program, and they were looking for a way to collect a lot of artifacts of student learning, and they really had a need to track and measure and demonstrate the learning. So we went through many different discussions about approaches and technologies, and this really led to the first pilot. So using that as an example, the first technology we identified was using the portfolio that is associated with Sakai, and that was our phase one. So once we thought, this may have broader impact or use for campus, we decided to move away from one small project and do an initial pilot. So our first pilot we did with about 5 faculty that had expressed an interest, and we used it with the Sakai tool here on campus. And I just note that Sakai is not our learning management or course management system at Cornell, so it was an opportunity to look at this strictly for the portfolio piece of it. So at that point, it was really to assess the value of this type of tool for both teaching and learning. And then we moved to the second phase, is we established that there was some value to the small group of pilot tiers that we had in the first pilot, and then we decided to look at it in the broader context, that this small group finds value to it, so what would it look like to open it up for a broader campus use? So we did create a phase two where we opened the pilot up to many, many more faculty and looked also at different technologies, because the first phase indicated that Sakai wasn't as usable for the portfolio piece of it as we had hoped and expected it. So the critical part of the second pilot was really looking at it, not the value, but what's the viability of being able to scale it for a campus-wide service. And that was the key goal that we were looking at, and all of the various components that constitute that central campus that we need to offer. Okay. So what we did for the various stages of the pilot, we had different evaluation strategies or assessment strategies, starting with that original pilot project to really inform that. So our team, these are sort of some standard practices that we have. We did some literature reviews. We also looked at the landscape of what's out there from both a use perspective and a technology perspective, and that helped to identify the questions that we wanted to answer for the various pilots. One thing to note is because the phase one part of the pilot was such a small group of users, and it was really an exploration. So some of our, having a large scale evaluation plan just wasn't really appropriate for that. So for the data collection methods that we did in the evaluation plan for phase one, we used a case study approach because we had such a small group of people that made the most sense. And so we were able to really dig into the teaching philosophy, why you're using the portfolio, your background in portfolios, and how that fits into the use. And on the Pathable site, we do have an example of one of our case study reports so that you can see that. And that was very helpful for the first part of the assessment so that we could really identify the key questions. And the information that we learned from the case studies helped us to inform phase two, and also to help us inform how to support faculty in the second phase. So in the larger pilot that we did, what you'll see in our formal evaluation plan, is we had several methods that we used. We did a student survey. We did some student focus groups, many faculty and graduate TA interviews, as well as some other methodology in order to get at how well this works as a service and whether it should be scalable, including a very detailed technical review. And then the final part was creating the various reports that we use to look at that. So when you're thinking about doing this type of pilot and looking at evaluation strategies, the questions that we ask may be slightly different than what you would have on your campus. So one thing that we look at is, what are the key questions?
Yeah, and so I reinforce that, remembering that in each of our pilots, we really had a different focus. So our questions in the last phase, which is more what we're focusing on here, where we piloted chalk and wire, were really about the feasibility of a service. So that introduces a whole other set of questions about the scalability of the technology, about what's required for service providers, how many FTE had to spend their time with faculty, despite the fact that it was a hosted solution in both cases. Sakai was hosted when we did our pilot, and Chalk and Wire was hosted. So this is a quote from an article in a journal that's in the executive summary. And I put it up here because a large part of our effort, we realized there was value in really providing a context, a common vocabulary, starting to suss out where the common interests, the differences, and how people understood portfolio practice separate from the technology. And it also was reinforcement for the fact that this was driven from many places. One of our key partner organizations was our Center for Teaching Excellence. And I would say that if you're in an IT organization, depending on how you're organized on your campus, it's always helpful to have a close partnership with another entity that's in the academic, squarely set in the academic environment on your campus. So a Center for Teaching Excellence, library, faculty, advisory group, however you frame it. But this speaks to the driver that is pedagogical for this for this pilot. And it also, if people are saying, are focused on the technology, this kind of brings people back to thinking, maybe to your leadership, to saying, is this really what we're embracing? Is this a philosophy that we believe, excuse me, about e-portfolios? And we had a certain amount of this in our executive summary, but we also used this information in different sessions that we had working with our pilot faculty. So one of the things that these are several elements that you'll see in the executive summary that were part of our planning and our discussion with our pilot participants. We talked about scenarios for e-portfolio use because what we learned was that there are faculty who, and this is a challenge when you're doing a pilot over just a semester, that it was looked at as a course. We're going to do this within the course versus a program versus an institutional reason for using portfolios. Secondly, the idea of portfolio philosophy is really different. If you're thinking about student-centered and who owns the content and who's going to decide what they want to share versus using it as a window into how a learner is doing all along the way, being able to have complete transparency to the student's work before they've actually made decisions about what they're going to share and highlight. And finally, we included a matrix of potential technology solutions because aside from the comprehensive, dedicated e-portfolio tools we ended up piloting, like OSP or Chalk and Wire, there are many examples of using blogs and wikis, a static web page. So it was sort of showing the spectrum of going from static to dynamic. And if the interest was in reporting capability or, you know, just how comprehensive the view that any of our stakeholders wanted out of the tool. And we ended up on the far end of the scale looking at a tool that had extensive reporting capabilities. So one question, again, here's another question for thinking about. Are portfolios being used on your campus today? How many people know where the uses are right now?
That's pretty good.
That's very good. So you have a sense of your landscape. And maybe for those who didn't raise your hand, you need to do a little pulse taking to find out what is actually going on and what people are doing. And sometimes they're not calling it portfolios, but they're engaged in practices, portfolio practices of reflection and formative assessment and collection and highlighting of work.
So now moving back into where we are with the portfolio, and the campus landscape really informed a lot of our way we conducted the pilots, sort of both the beginning and getting started and also at the end. So these are the goals that we had associated with the second phase, the final larger pilot project that we had, and really to look at the, you know, supporting the faculty and student needs, which we identified early on, and then all of the different levels of the portfolio. And as Joan said, it's really interesting to identify sort of the purpose of the portfolio and what level at the institution you're looking for. And so that, those are some of the different challenges that we had in trying to assess it. We also, as I said, we also looked at the technology and the ease of use for both the users as well as for the support team in moving forward. Okay. One of the things we looked at with the second phase of the pilot, the first phase was fairly self-selected of people who were fairly proficient with technology and piloting the portfolio. So in the second one, we really wanted to target people that are interested and that we thought would be likely candidates. So we first started by looking at disciplines that we knew traditionally used portfolio approaches, like any sort of art or design type of field, field of education. Actually, surprisingly, in School of Engineering use it at Cornell, and a few other like that. So we did target people to say, would you be interested in working with us to participate in the pilot and to look at the different technologies and seeing how you're doing that. So that's one thing to think about with the pilot. One of our goals with the several pilots we've done in the last couple of years is really try to make sure we have a cross-section that represents our campus. So we don't want to have it all in one college or one unit, but a variety of disciplines. And what we also had is and also a variety of class sizes. And in this pilot project, one of the things we also had was a program. It was not a course-based participant, but a program based out of the government department where the students are doing outreach out in the community. It's a learning service program, and they actually participated in the pilot. So we did embrace not just the course-based portfolio, but also some program-based portfolio. So one of the things is to ask the question of the participants is, as you're thinking about this, have you engaged some key stakeholders on campus? So as Joan said, we had partnership with our Center for Teaching Excellence and some other faculty development team on campus. So is that something that you are in that stage or not, or I mean, how you define campus stakeholders, I should say. And some for us, the program also we report out through the, obviously, our own IT organization, but also through the provost as well. So those are some of the key stakeholders that these reports ultimately would need to go to. Okay. So the next aspect of the pilot was looking at the technology, and it's really interesting is sort of in the IT is when we looked early on and identifying the technologies is for that very first project, we did start with blogs and wikis and some other technologies to try to look at the aspects of tracking and being able to comment on student work. So that's why we first went to Sakai, because it did have the ability to upload a lot of content, and in this case a lot of audio and video materials, and have the faculty go through and be able to add comment and give feedback to the students. So that was identified as it was beyond just the collecting student artifacts, but it was the ability to comment and provide feedback. And that was a really critical aspect of the teaching and learning feature with the kind of technology. What happened then was with the Sakai, when we used it in the first time, and I mean just strictly their portfolio tool, not the rest of it, is it really had it had an interesting learning curve, I guess I should say, is at one point it was fairly straightforward to load things in there, but setting it up and working with faculty was relatively complex. And the technology was also very complicated. I know we struggled with trying to build templates and reports, and we had many conference calls with other schools that were using the tool. And the technology just didn't seem what we were looking for to be able to scale. Some schools we talked to had dedicated programmers that were able to do that, and that wasn't what we needed. We needed something where faculty could and students could create their own portfolios and provide some templates without a lot of technical support staff. So that's why we started looking at other products, and that's where the usability really is key. For that is because one of the things that we always look at Cornell in the pilots, because you know we're a fairly large school, we have 15,000 students to support, and we probably have a similar size staff to many of you, so the scalability of the technology is really key. So these are some of the products that we looked at and evaluated with the usability and how well does the technology work and how easily can it be supported? So how much time would our team need to get faculty set up, get students set up, and provide the support that they needed? And so those are some of the products that we went through, some of which may be familiar to you. The other thing that we looked at is whether or not we wanted to host it locally at Cornell or hosting it with a vendor. Now, the strategy that we've used for many of our pilots, like we recently did a course management one, is we'd like to host with vendors first to focus on the features and the impact of teaching and learning, and then if we find value, then we'll deal with installing the technology locally. So many of these had a hoster option, which was great for the pilot. There's a lot of different reasons that we didn't pick many of them. Some of them were just very complicated to use. Even our tech team found it difficult to use some of these products. So we said, well, do you maybe that wouldn't scale so well for faculty? So Chalk and Wire we came up with was an initial assessment, and we decided to then pilot that with the second semester of the pilot project. And that was, it was an interesting one. And the one thing that was a little bit adding some complexity is we're currently in the middle of going through an accreditation process on campus, and we had been asked through the provost office to kind of look at some tools and see if they tie into some of the data collection needs. And some of the products we also looked at with that lens, which, again, some of them had value, but the campus, I don't think, was really ready for that, and we didn't want to add that level of complexity to the pilot, so we chose a product that had all of the features that we were looking for, the ability to provide feedback, the ability to track progress. It also has some additional features where you can have learning outcomes tied to rubrics and so forth. So we found some value added in that. So this was a list that we came up with, and in our report we go into a little bit more detail about that.
Yeah, and I would reiterate that that was that references back to the idea of multiple stakeholders and interests, because we might have done things a little bit differently had there not been that interest in an institution-wide, very intense reporting aspect to a tool. But that's what it was at the time. So going back to the idea of pilot design, startup and support, a lot of effort went into how we were going to work with our faculty, our students. And for our own staff, we were a small group, and there's a lot of hands-on time that staff need to spend to become familiar with the tool. And I have to say our time frame, which was spring 2009, fall 2009 and then spring 2010 is short for getting to know two different tools well enough, especially when faculty start asking questions about what can I do, fill in the blank. So sometimes we were just in time teaching ourselves things as we went along. But we were very responsive to faculty needs. We also worked with the Center for Teaching Excellence in doing a session on reflective practice. The idea of reflective practice, formative assessment, some of this, the language that is new to faculty, articulating learning outcomes, creating rubrics. You know, there are many faculty who do a wonderful job of teaching but haven't had to document it or haven't, you know, put it in a matrix. And so there's a whole orientation that goes on around that. And then we had a training with the vendor that spent quite a bit of time orienting to the tool itself. So for the students, we also did in-class orientation. So we offered to have our staff go to the classes and work with the faculty to sort of present the purpose of the portfolios. And what, in the classes where that didn't happen, that made a huge difference in the students' perception of the value or the purpose of the tool, because to them, in some ways, it's another place you're asking me to put my work, another place I need to upload my assignments. I don't get it. You know, why am I doing this? I'm already in the LMS. So a lot of effort went into that support for piloteers. For the data collection, as Claire said, we did use case studies, and we also did pre- and post surveys with the faculty and interviews as well as student surveys. And again, on Pathable, you can find references. We did these in Qualtrics. It seems like a lot of data collection, and I think one of the challenges here, I went to John Campbell's talk this morning, and a point that he made that resonated with me is that some of us don't have evaluation staff. You know, we went through the IRB approval process at Cornell, but This is yet another role that our instructional design team plays sometimes, and we partner with people with deeper evaluation experience or statistical research experience, but you're also going to do what you need to do, and I think creating an evaluation methodology, and Claire did a half-day session on this, that works within your resources and is still has rigor and enough integrity that you feel good about your informed recommendation. That's important to think about, that level of effort and structure that you're going to put into your evaluation. So in phase two, when we were piloting chalk and wire, all of those methods were things that we did because, going back to this other slide, even in doing our training, things would happen. We would be making observations, not formal data collection, but things that we might debrief, and someone was capturing those. We were saying we would periodically interview the support staff that was consulting and working directly with the faculty, because if you wait till the end of the pilot to do that, you forget some key points about, you know, maybe it's subliminal, but you forget some of the pain sometimes. But and also some of the little aha moments that happen along the way or that come out of an orientation discussion. So if they aren't captured in a formal survey, you still have a way of capturing the information. And we did phone check-ins with faculty. We did a 5-question survey because we just wanted to have touch points. And we learned a lot from those, that there were faculty who were going to get started third week in the semester, but they were still pondering their learning outcomes and rubrics. You know, it took time. We also provided ongoing feedback to the vendor, and that was that's always a positive, I think, from working with a selected tool, even if it's not the one you it's beneficial for both parties. They learn a lot about the at higher ed client, and we also, are able to influence a little bit the development and their thinking about our needs. So one of the big questions that we had was, what's the primary reason for wanting students to have portfolios? I don't think you can assume that it's one. So just another quick poll in the room. How many people feel like on your campus creating a collection of learning artifacts is the main driver among your faculty? Okay. How about to assess learning?
A little bit more.
To showcase or highlight specific work for students to have the ability to do that? How about none of the above? We don't know why faculty want to use it. They just think it's a good idea. It sounds good. And all of the above. Okay. So I broke this out, and maybe it's pointing out the obvious, but to many of our faculty, this was one of our big learnings from the pilot, actually, that people were coming at this with different areas of focus. And this also aligned with the way that many of the e-portfolio tools present themselves. If you start going through that list of tools that Claire had up there, you'll find that there are sort of three areas in most of the assessment tools where they make a decision about where to put the focus and the energy. It's either a repository, and again, how faculty use the tools sometimes is it's another place to put stuff. Secondly, there's the assessment aspect. And in Sakai, it was the matrix and rubrics, and there was different language for it in Chalk and Wire. They had a table of contents model, and it was still a learning outcomes and creating a rubrics, but they used a different language for it. But in both cases, there was an assessment piece. And finally, the third aspect of both Sakai and Chalk and Wire was the showcase, the ability for students to select and highlight their work. And there were different levels of satisfaction with that. In Sakai at the time, for students, their perspective on the showcase was very basic, not much flexibility. Chalk and Wire, beautiful way to present your stuff, and you could present it to different audiences. So if you were in the service learning program and were presenting for your faculty advisor, that was one set of materials. If you're presenting to the community members that you were working with in the program, you might do a different presentation, and Chalk and Wire allowed you to do that. So that was something, that was a big learning for us, and that influenced how we were conducting our focus groups at the end, because we were able to structure our focus group evaluation And I highly recommend, when we're talking about methodology, that the focus groups are structured. We have these faculty for a limited period of time. And so rather than have just open-ended questions, we really use some techniques. We have a colleague in our communications marketing group, is the name of it, who has gone through the Burke Institute and has many techniques for capturing information in focus groups that are a little more structured and have triggers. And I think that that's was a very fruitful approach for us. So the challenges that we faced, so some of our learnings from the pilot, so if you're about to launch into this, vocabulary, artifact, you know, do people use this, a learning object, you know, you're introducing a lot of, and again, sometimes language that's very particular to the tools, table of contents, matrix, rubrics, are these, you know, part of your glossary on your campus. New pedagogical practices. Reflection is not something that all students or all faculty know how to do or appreciate or, you know, are familiar with. And as I said, learning outcomes and rubrics, just, you know, really articulating an assessment approach. And something else that happened was we had some faculty who said, it's a replacement for Blackboard. We were like, well, that wasn't exactly our intention, but if you're not familiar with the tool and you see the repository aspect, you see that you're uploading assignments, you see the possibility of grading, kind of looks like what you're doing in Blackboard, only different. So we really had a lot of discussion around what, again, what is the intent? Why do you need or want an e-portfolio tool outside of your LMS? And finally, another big takeaway for us was that this was a new frame of reference in how you looked at content and interaction with students. This is a student-centered way of thinking in a lot of ways versus what the LMS has conditioned us to do, which is to think in terms of courses. Things begin and end in the context of a semester, then they start up again. And it's rare that we that faculty get to have that long view over multiple courses or over a program or across a department. And that was a great value of the e-portfolios, was that that it really emerges over time and across courses.
So one of the key questions for us is when we're looking at the outcome of the pilot was, did the data enable us to answer the question? And it definitely was, yes, we could answer the questions. The other thing is, could we make a recommendation? And yes, we did. And one of the things, which is sort of the point of our session, is the recommendation was actually not to adopt a central service at this time. And I think at this time is the critical phrase that we use there. So one of the things is always a danger of about a pilot is people have pilots and seem to assume it will just naturally become a service. And in this case, we very explicitly had a decision-making process where we wanted to make sure that we you know, didn't make that assumption. And sometimes it's a little awkward when you have faculty embedded in a tool and you're saying, okay, we've tried it out. We're really not, you know, ready to continue supporting it. And then we had to have a strategy for backing out. But the level of analysis that we were doing is, obviously we did the technology review. And one of the things about looking at chalk and wire, our participants and staff used it for a single semester. And the features that were there were very rich. We really were torn about the usability because part of it was we didn't feel we had enough time with the tool. And the feedback we received from both faculty and student was mixed. It wasn't really clear about this particular tool and the value of it. It was very mixed. Had to do with people's prior experience, their comfort with technology. So we didn't really have a clear answer of, yes, this is a tool, or no, it's really not. We went round and round on this. I mean, Joan and I had a lot of long discussions about this, about whether or not we would extend the pilot, you know, look at it from a couple of different points of view. And at that time and where we were at Cornell, we just said, well, it's really not worth it. There were some other business budgetary constraints that we had as well that intersected with our ability to continue that. But I think the bottom line was all of the learning that we had was there. That particular technology maybe wasn't ready for adoption right now. Oops, I haven't done. Oh, And so that's where going into, we had a very strong relationship with the vendor. They're very responsive to our needs. We gave them a lot of suggestions. But how their business model worked was something that didn't line up with how we wanted to roll out the service. When you get into licenses and how they count licenses, whether it's per FTE, per student, per course, and it didn't match our needs at Cornell and how we wanted to roll out the service. Ironically enough, it did match the need of that service learning project that I discussed earlier, and they actually have continued to use that particular tool because it met their needs, and they were able to move forward with that. And the rest of it was also the looking at from the faculty and student perspective of some of these tools are very large and very complicated, like many course management systems. And at that time, we thought, well, maybe this is a little too much features that they're not really ready for that because as Joan was going through where people were in their thought process and their understanding of what is a PE portfolio and how valuable it is the investment in a large-scale central campus tool just wasn't there yet because you're really talking about campus readiness and the ability to support it. I think our staff was ready to support it. That wasn't an issue at all because they became very comfortable with it. But it really goes into, was it worth the investment in a new service with the institutional readiness? And beyond the pilot participants and other inquiries, we didn't have this overwhelming demand from campus for this. And I think part of it is because there's a lot of other things going on campus right now that are taking faculty's attention away. So we have clearly identified there's a value and we should have some type of support service, but we really didn't feel we were ready to do a central technology tool. Okay. And this is an excerpt from the final report. So all of this is up on the Pathable site. And we really said we identified all the features that were beneficial and solutions and all of the underlying teaching and learning and support aspects of using a portfolio, but we really didn't feel we were ready for a central tool. Okay, so this is where we decided to say, nope, we're not ready. We're not doing the pilot. We retired Sakai. We retired Chalk and Wire and really focused on other aspects of supporting faculty that are interested in portfolios. So the benefits of the pilot was really going through the process because one of the things where the pilot initially was really focused on the teaching and learning benefits of a portfolio approach and then how do you translate that into a technology-based tool. And what we learned and our campus partner learned is the vocabulary is really important in how you talk about this and also the time it takes for people to understand how does that intersect with your teaching practices. So we had the case study that we have up on the Pathable site as an example is with a Swedish instructor, and she had been using portfolio for years. So she understood it. She taught well with them. She had a very sophisticated approach. And then we had other people in the pilot where it was one of these, probably what many of you will get is, I've heard this portfolio thing, and I want to try it out. And that was a trickier one because that was where they were sort of this, it was this process that evolved. Where sometimes the technology tool got in the way a little bit because the tools that we looked at locked you into a particular framework which didn't really lend itself to that discovery process that faculty needed to go through to be able to figure out, is this going to work with how I teach? And understanding of the different kinds of portfolio approaches you could have, which one is the one that would be best for their particular way of teaching. So that was really, I think, the key learning for the pilot team and all of our academic technology support staff. Okay. So what we ended up with, we decided not to adopt a central tool, but we are still supporting it. We have the bulk of the faculty that went through the various stages of the pilot, which we're still supporting. We moved to other technologies, and what we're really looking at is technologies that we have in place as standard campus technology. So we have a central blog service that is being used for many portfolios in language studies, in not just Swedish, but in German and many others. They have an extensive portfolio practice. And there's other tools, anything from an Adobe Acrobat PDF to a web-based portfolio or whatever technology people are comfortable with. That's where we are with supporting it right now. But, however, it's not done. In fact, right before we started this morning, one of my colleagues, we were talking about when we get back to campus, something else we want to look at in this field, is we're going to continue to monitor developments in all of the tools that we looked at and keeping our eyes open for more to see, as the campus evolves, is there more readiness, and do the tools mature so that at that point we can then look at is it something where it's time to take another look at a tool and maybe say it's time to adopt that. And key is also monitoring the community. We talk to faculty. We have different avenues of communicating with faculty on campus, from the advisory board through the provost office, to really say, is there interest as it's evolving? And the interest actually, I think, is changing as there's more discussion on campus about learning outcomes and assessment for that. So one practice that we have that we do, that we've implemented in the past year, is developing a watch list of technologies. So we have an e-portfolio watch list. Many of the tools we had already assessed that we didn't adopt for a variety of reasons, but some that we've identified as having potential for the future.
So there's all of our agreement internally, and then there's actually telling the campus. So, of course, we wrote our report, and you can see that on the Pathable site. But we really needed to package our recommendations so that the focus was on this ongoing support. And we provided online resources and sort of really laid the foundation for continuing dialogue. We also invited all of the faculty, and they knew this going into the pilot, that the Center for Teaching Excellence was going to ask them to talk about their experience. And what was really inspiring was that I'm remembering one faculty member in landscape architecture who said all of our faculty got together and talked about learning outcomes for one of the first times ever, probably. We talked about our syllabus, but we've never had the meta discussion about learning outcomes and how students move through a series of courses in our department, which to us was a great success from the pilot, that kind of conversation was going on. So many times you've said to people, the pilot will end. It's a pilot. And there's sort of this, what? We didn't hear you. What did you say? People don't like to end pilots. And it's understandable when you've invested time and energy. And so a lot of our effort in preparing for the pilot was how to transition out of it. Mm-hmm. Could we get people's materials? Because unlike some tools, we've asked people to put academic content in here that really needed to be treated respectfully and moved to wherever they needed to go. So that was an investment of FTE in the staff to help faculty one-on-one to do that. And then we also followed up with each pilot participant. And this sounds like a small point, but they each received a letter inviting them to meet with a consultant about what they would like to do. Do they want to keep going with portfolios or not? And that's how our service learning faculty member ended up making her plan to keep going with the vendor chalk and wire. So all of that is good for us in terms of our credibility on campus. It encourages people that if you go with them and do a pilot with them, we're going to treat you well and help you transition, and it's not an empty investment of time. So another thing that we put into our report, which I think is a unique thing that we did that was critical, was acknowledging while people might be off doing whatever they're doing with individual technologies, something that to bear in mind about cloud-based solutions is that unlike working with portfolio vendors where you can negotiate certain things in a contract, if you're doing things with Google Sites or whatever it is that's in the cloud, that you might be able to understand from reading their agreements, but you may not be able to negotiate at times what's going to happen to the content that you put up there. And so we wanted faculty to be aware, because there's individual liability for these decisions at Cornell, that this is a policy, that we have university policy about this, but that it's each individual's responsibility to get knowledgeable about what it means. Because increasingly, as we talk about all the time, things are moving out there, they're disaggregating from the LMS, and it just goes to a general educational awareness about what it means to use those tools. So that was part of our summary. So, were we successful? Yes, we had a little celebration. We said, yes, we did it, because The success was we were asked to assess the feasibility of a service, and we made an informed recommendation. And we also started a campus conversation, and that has been ongoing at Cornell, about learning outcomes and assessment strategies. So it's easy sometimes, too, to what-if the data and say, well, you know, we had this challenge because if people hadn't started in Sakai, they might have liked Chalk and Wire better. But you can't, you know, you do what you're doing in that pilot with the information you have. The door that you leave open is to go back and review and revisit. But I think you have to pay attention and not second guess what your data is telling you about that group of people and their user experience with the tools. So we'll leave you with these final questions to ask yourself about getting ready. Is there a culture of assessment at your campus, and how do you define that? Can you articulate that? Could you have a conversation about assessment with a group of faculty? And that leads to the bigger question of, is your community ready to use portfolios, and even more so to adopt a single application or platform? And we hope that our conclusions here, and we'd be interested in the few minutes we have left, to find out whether this resonates with your path and whether you're ready to take the next steps in planning your portfolio. So we thank you for your time.